Good evening. I'd like to call the March 6, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members. Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. I'd like to take a few moments tonight and with some sadness and a sense of celebration at the same time on the same event. We're deeply saddened that Johanna Kirkwood was ill and wandered away from her home this weekend, and despite the efforts of some 500 volunteer searchers, they were not able to find her in time. So we extend our very deep sympathies to her family. Dementia is something that affects the whole family and the whole community, not just the individual patient. So we're deeply sorry for the family's loss. But the sense of celebration goes to the sense of community that we have when we see how many people just drop everything else that they're doing and step up and do the right thing and try to find a missing person. So I'm delighted that we're joined tonight by Sheriff Ken Lansing, Under Sheriff Derek Osborne, Officer Dawn Calkins, and Beth Harrington from the Emergency Response Center. We deeply, deeply appreciate the work that all of you and the 500 other people, I know the emergency fire and EMS services, I understand we had volunteers from as far away as Long Island and Pennsylvania to help out in this search. So we really appreciate all that you've done. And if any of you wants to address us for a few minutes, I'd love to hear, you know, if you have any reflections on what happened this weekend.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate that. It was quite an outpouring from the community, and it was really huge. The forest rangers come and help you when you have lost people like this, and those people, without them, would be, you know, be like almost a fruitless search, because they really coordinate everything very well, and they work very well with everybody from emergency services and law enforcement. And the volunteers were teamed up with certain people that have experience, and that's how they did it and did the coordination. Don and Derek both were in charge of the investigation as far as the sheriff's office was concerned. So they were in charge and did a great job to help coordinate everything with everybody that was there. But the community really came together, and so did many community businesses by feeding the people that were there, because we did hundreds of people, especially on Sunday. It was unfortunate we couldn't get air support until Monday, and that was done by a local person, and that was Vince Monticello, who was a lieutenant for the Ithaca Police Department. But he did it on his own time. He came in and part of the civil aviation, and he got the plane up in the morning and did some looking, but of course with the snow cover it didn't help him much. But he stayed around and said, I'm going to go back up even though I have somebody to go with me, and he flew up in the afternoon, and it was shortly after that he discovered. And it was really great. And we thank you very much and everybody that was there. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. On behalf of the whole community, we really appreciate the work that all of you do. Thank you. I understand from Lee Shurtleff, our Director of Emergency Response, that our investment in systems and people has really paid off. And Beth, if you want to say anything about that, come to the microphone.
I echo what Ken said and the fact that this was a total team effort. We were able to utilize our office space and the equipment and supplies and the organization that we have up there. And actually by Monday, we were over almost 650 people that we had put through in 3 days, and they did come from all over the state. Our county has its own search and rescue team, and they were the first ones there, including the dog. And we had law enforcement canines there. But it really was just a total team effort on the part of formal agencies as well as the community, and you all should be very proud of anybody that participated, and thank you.
Thank you, Beth. And the forest rangers are employees of the DEC, so we have them to thank.
And search and rescue functions under the DEC.
Okay. Thanks so much. And just one last note, any family that is struggling with Alzheimer's or any other form of dementia, the Office for the Aging is extremely helpful. I've, in fact, used their services myself regarding my mom and my mother-in-law. Their phone number is 274-5482, and they are, for the moment, in the basement in the lower level of this building. So thank you all very much. I would like to invite members of the public if they'd like to speak. We have two people signed up. If there's anyone else they'd like to address the legislature, time limit is 3 minutes, and Kathy will help you keep time. Okay, Jay Potter and then Terry Plater. Jay?
Thank you. I'm just here this evening to talk just for a moment about the proposal that's gone forward for an art project on the old library wall at the intersection of Court and Cayuga Street. And I'm here as a resident of Cayuga Street, speaking in support of the artwork going in place. And I think it's a really good solution to a lot of the bad graffiti that's been showing up there and has had to have a lot of maintenance to keep it clean. So I think that's a really nice solution to putting something up that would take away from a blank white canvas that's inviting to whoever to write on it. And basically, we're delighted that you're considering changing the resolution to make it possible for that proposed mural to extend beyond just the limitations of that curved wall. And we very much hope you also change that resolution so that we can continue to beautify that area and make this project a real nice community success for people to enjoy. And I believe that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Terry?
Thank you. Terry Plater is the name. I'm also a community resident. I live on Cascadilla Street, walk past the wall every day. I'm also chairwoman of the Public Art Commission. So the project came to us first, but we don't have jurisdiction over the county building. But I really want to support it. I'm going to read something that I wrote in support of Jay. Jay Stukes is painting the mural. He's designing it and painting it with his urban youth art students. It combines all the elements that the public art and the community, public art commission and the community seek to promote: community participation and support, institutional cooperation, leadership development, especially in Ithaca's youth population, mentorship and painting opportunities for local accomplished artists, the promotion of new art forms, and the production and installation of significant works of art in our public spaces. I think Jay's project is visionary. He has a track record in working with youth. And the nice thing is that the youth can be brought into the public art process while learning new skills and the means of creative expression. So I'm speaking as the chairwoman of the commission. I'm also an artist, but I don't do street art. I quite appreciate it as distinct from graffiti art. And then I'm a community resident, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? State your name, where you live.
Good evening. My name is Neil Uli, and I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca. Most of you know me by now. I'm a member of the board and a volunteer at Loaves and Fishes. At your desks, you've each been given an invitation to join us for a meal. I want to emphasize tonight that Loaves and Fishes isn't just a place for people who don't have food to come and get a meal. It's also about community. It's a place where people can gather, talk, get to know each other, and get to know people that they don't already know and that they might never see at any other time. So I would like to invite you all to join us and hope to see you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. Anyone else? All right. I am told that Bill Goodman from the Town of Ithaca Board will be coming later in the evening to speak to us as a municipal official. So I think whatever we're doing at that time, we'll invite Bill to the microphone. The next item of business, it's my pleasure to present the Distinguished Youth Award. So I'd like to invite Elijah DeCastro and Jonas Perrier and their respective families to come on up to the front. So the whole support team is in back, family, friends, tutors, cousins, et cetera. So thank you all for coming. This is Jonas Perrier and Elijah DeCastro, Jeb Perrier and Christy Alexander, Jonas's parents, and Jeff DeCastro and Faith DeCastro. Elijah's mom is Sandra Steingraber, and she is traveling tonight, so she wasn't able to be here. I selected Jonas and Elijah because they say that public speaking is one of the scariest things that people, one of the greatest fears people have. So I noticed with incredible admiration at the State Theater hearing that we had on December 1st, the TCOG hearing on hydrofracking, that these two young men came and spoke, and I thought that was memorable. So you can actually see and hear their testimony by going online. If you just type in Tompkins County Council of Governments, go to that website, then look for the hearing, and Nathan is doing that right now. you can actually find their names and see their testimony. I promise you it'll make you feel better about the future. So it's my pleasure to recognize Jonas and Elijah, both of Trumansburg, with the February Distinguished Youth Award. They're here today because Elijah's family was traveling last month. Jonas Perrier grew up around the Grassroots Festival, so he learned early what it means to have a vision about how to contribute to your community and work to make things happen, work with others. He's helped out in many ways at the festival over the years, and this winter also helped to set up the first Florida Grassroots Festival near Miami. Possibly a future entrepreneur, Jonas helped with the management decisions and ran his own ice cream booth for the week. He used his concert experiences to help set up three Big Splash anti-fracking benefit concerts last year in Binghamton, Hector, and Syracuse. An avid reader, Jonas is homeschooled, so his independence is not a surprise. At the TCOG hearing, Jonas told the crowd and the DEC, I love this, I've been having a hard time understanding the S-Guys, and tonight I see that I'm not alone. When I'm your age, I hope I don't have to drive to New York City to get a clean glass of water. When I have kids, I hope my kids have a clean future. Why should we let outsiders come to New York and sell our gas to China? The gas is in the ground and has been for millions of years. We can afford to wait until there's a proven safe way to get it out. He also spoke at the DEC hearing in Binghamton, where he was the only child to speak and got a standing ovation. Elijah DeCastro is a dedicated environmental activist in the fifth grade in Trumansburg. He has lobbied against fracking with state senators in Albany, written the governor, and submitted his own comments on the S-Guys about fracking's effects on kids. Elijah is an active member of his school's environmental club called the Green Machine. He is constantly trying to figure out how to put his money where his mouth is, for example, walking more than a mile to and from school, regardless of the weather. In his testimony at the State Theater, Elijah read a letter that he had sent to Governor Cuomo about fracking.
Here's an excerpt. I'm an ordinary fifth grader in Trumansburg, New York. I don't think that's quite true. I don't think they're that ordinary. My mother says that if they do horizontal hydraulic fracturing anywhere in New York, we will have to move to a totally different state. I've lived in New York all my life. I've grown comfortable in New York, and it will be a nightmare to move into a totally different state. They say it's safe. They say it's safe, but they've done many bad things in Pennsylvania. Their trucks make the road impossible for kids to ride bikes. They give kids asthma and can kill them. They make the place smoggy. I have sensitive lungs. Please don't kill me. And then Elijah read the letter he got back from Governor Cuomo. Again, an excerpt. Dear Elijah, thank you for your letter. I'm encouraged to know that young people are taking an active interest in the government. It's an exciting time to be governor. Blah, blah, blah. He didn't say that. I'm sorry. I've had passion for public service since I was very young, and I encourage that you pursue your passions. All dreams are reachable with hard work and dedication. Sincerely, Andrew Cuomo. Elijah concluded by saying, I would like the governor to know that my passion is to ban fracking. I have learned a ton of information about government through this letter. Kids need a healthy environment to live in. Kids don't want to worry about their backyard where they play sports is going to blow up. I also want the governor to know that I don't want a job in the gas industry. My favorite animal is polar bears, and solar panels will help them live. So, Elijah and Jonas, you've learned a very important lesson at a young age, that your voice counts and you can make a difference. That is an empowering idea that we hope will stay with you through your lifetimes. You'll inspire many others with your ability to articulate your views and your courage in speaking up. I think you'll both be too young to run for the county legislature in 2017, but 2021 is not that far away. I hope you'll think about it. So we have some gifts for you, but first I'd like to see if you'd like to make some remarks.
First, I'd just like to thank you for the award, and hopefully with continued efforts, we'll be able to ban hydrofracking in New York State. Oh, nice. Thank you.
This award means a lot to me. I'm glad my family, friends, and teachers are here to see me win it. Last October, I hit a random stick on the road and fell off my bike and shattered my jaw and got a concussion and ripped my chin open. This experience taught me a lesson of community service. The first thing that happened was the neighbors drove me to the ER. The doctors took care of me. My tutor, June, who is sitting in the audience today, drove to the hospital with my mom while I was getting a CAT scan. Then I had surgery and my jaws were wired shut for 2 months. During that time, neighbors brought soup. The school gave me an at-home tutor. Then, when I went back to school, the school nurse helped me and kids were kind to me. I believe everyone should do community service and not to expect awards. Just do it. One of the things I feel strongly is about fracking and how it will affect kids. Can you imagine what would have happened if fracking trucks were on the road when I fell off my bike? I walk to school every day. If fracking trucks came down Main Street, kids could not walk to school safely. If trucks spray toxic brine from fracking wells all over Main Streets, kids will walk in it and splash in it and think that it's harmless. Almost every day after school, I eat Chobani Greek yogurt at a store called Good to Go. I am going to write a letter to Governor Cuomo about yogurt, because all the kids in New York State like it, including him and his daughters. I will tell him that you can't expect good yogurt if there are gas wells where cows graze and if the air is polluted and the water is poisonous. I want to continue serving my community by letting the government know what kids need. Since you are the government, I hope you will help. Thank you.
Each of you, to Jonas Perrier, in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Skewed Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream,
and AMB Awards engraving. And for Elijah. There you go. And a package of various goodies. One for Jonas and one for Elijah. And I think these are Purity Ice Cream coupons. I don't know what to do with those. And t-shirts for you each. A little bit cool. All right. And really, just thank you so much for everything you do. And take a village, so thank you, parents and family. Take care. Great. Fun. Thank you, Frank, for thinking of this award. All right, legislators, would anyone have something to share with us? Carol.
I wanted to thank the people who came to talk to us in support of public art. As I understand it, every time this topic comes up, it generates a lot of discussion. I think we all agree that in concept it enriches our community. In practice, it can be very difficult to move to understand that the concept of public art doesn't necessarily mean that everybody who looks at it has to agree that every design is what they would choose. So it's been a process of several years for the county to move forward with public art. I just want to make sure that those watching or listening, or if they've still been in the audience, to understand that we don't actually have something on our agenda tonight. The Facilities and Infrastructure Committee did approve, as was its charge, to go ahead with the design that was presented to us for the curved wall of the old library. That can proceed. Staff has some technical stuff, license and paperwork to complete. There was discussion at the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, which I'll tell you about now just because I'm on the topic, as to whether what was approved in 2010 included a four-month window for the art to remain up. There was discussion at the committee as to whether to bring that back to the legislature to have the art, after the work of the artist goes up, to be able to remain longer. That would have to come back to the legislature. And then the approval in the past had been for the curved wall. There was discussion about whether the design should continue onto some of the flat areas of the wall, and that will continue and may come to us in the future. But other than that, I do have the design here. I will be passing it. I'll do that during my committee report. I just didn't want people watching to keep watching, thinking we were going to act tonight. So thank you, and thank you to the artists and to the many people in the community who participate in the committee that got this going. That's a city commission, and then continue to work to bring art of various kinds to the community. Also to GIAC that participated in this particular design and conceptualization of how to proceed with the project. So thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Frank, and then Will.
Thanks, Martha. Martha, first, a word of thanks to you for recognizing the emergency services personnel in the county on such a sad task. That was nice of you to do that.
Can you speak up?
Want me to say it again?
Yes.
I was thanking Martha for recognizing the emergency services personnel in the county for participating in such a sad task as what they had to perform. It's nice to have that group recognized. It's sad that it has to be in that way. The announcements I have are simple. Just to remind the listeners and some of you that might qualify for this, there are two deadlines for exemptions that are looming. the STAR exemption for property taxes. This is the part that attaches to your school bill, school tax bill. Those exemptions are due Thursday. And if anybody in the listening audience or you have anybody in your constituency that qualifies that may not have applied, they have to get a hold of the assessor on that one. The other one is the ag district applications. Those are due April 1st, and it'd be good. So many people forget, and they only will forget once, because if you have to pay the full shot, if you've forgotten to file for the exemption, it can be quite severe on anyone in agriculture. So just a reminder that those two are coming up this Thursday for the STAR and April 1st for the ag exemption. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Will, and then Mike.
Thank you, Martha. I would just like to amplify the words of Neil Uli and point you to the invitation that we all found on our desk tonight, inviting us to share mail at Lowe's and Fish's. I don't know how many of you have had the chance to do this, but if you've never done it or if you haven't done it some time, I would encourage you to go. They're going to be calling all of us to invite us specifically. The key thing to understand is that while Lowe's and Fish's regularly and primarily serves people who are in need for various things, they are welcoming to all, and they actually consider that part of the success of their operation is that there are no questions asked, and that they truly do have a mix of people from our community, and it's a very interesting mix. You will meet people that you're not likely to encounter elsewhere. And I oh, and by the way, they generally serve an incredibly good meal, and it's free. So if you're free on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday lunch, or a Tuesday when you're not in one of these meetings, or Thursday, go over Loaves and Fishes. It's a good thing to do, and it's a really good part of our community. And the other thing I wanted to call to your attention is this report that I think all of us got in our mailbox a while ago. And I finally unearthed it from my pile of things to read. It's by Tompkins County Local, and it is a series of articles about what we need to be thinking about as policymakers as we are moving toward times of scarcity. And the very first article has to do with the question is, what are we going to be doing when fossil fuels, petroleum, gasoline becomes not gone but significantly more expensive? And the author suggest that this is actually something that is going to likely be happening over the next several years, probably by the end of this decade. We will, you know, we're already seeing a spike in gasoline price that, from everything I've read, is attributable not to scarcity, but to a variety of factors, including speculation. We are at this time producing more gas than we have in over a decade. We are shipping most of it abroad. Speculation is rampant because people know that this is a valuable commodity and the supplies are coming to an end. But when it gets much more expensive to extract, this is going to change everything we do. And I would encourage you to read the article and just think about how that would affect what we do. And I will warn you, there's some charts that my old eyes had a hard time reading, but if you go online to TC Local, they've got the whole report, and it's in color, so it's actually a little easier to read. So do read this, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Will. Mike, and then Jim.
I thought I'd take just a minute to report on the Civil War Commission. Last night at the Tompkins County Public Library BorgWarner Room, we had another in our series of lectures regarding the commemoration of the Civil War, the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, I should say. Dr. Laurie Ginsburg spoke about the role of women, northern women, in both prior to, during, and after the Civil War, and the effects of of their activities on the women's rights movement. It was a very interesting lecture. It was well attended. We had a number of people. I couldn't help thinking while we were there last night how nice it would have been if we could have had it televised on cable channel 15 so that more people in our community could have seen and heard that lecture. We'll be having more of those lectures, and perhaps in the future we'll be able to do that. Another activity that we're working on is the encampment we're planning for next August, which will take place just outside the city at the Veterans Volunteer property on Elmira Road. In conjunction with some activities they're having, a pancake breakfast and a barbecue, we're going to have a group of reenactors in there that will be educating people about what life was like during the Civil War activity. There'll be a day or two there. We hope we'll attract a number of people to come and see that. Hope to have other activities there in conjunction with that, perhaps music, perhaps some lectures or other things that will happen at the same time. We're still going forward with the refurbishment of the Daniel Jackson Monument in the city cemetery. There'll be activities related to that, which will be announced probably May or June of this coming year. We've been doing what we can with a very, very limited budget. We think it's important that the education about what role Tompkins County played in the Civil War is important, and how we can do that and keep this constantly in folks' thoughts over the next 4 years is the activity of our wonderful commission, and happy to be there with all the other members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Jim.
Thank you, Martha. A couple of things. While I appreciate very much the fact that Loaves and Fishes have invited us to break bread with them, I'm reminded that the whole operation is run by volunteers, and it is pretty clear that it is always good when the community can be involved in something like Loaves and Fishes. I applaud the people who go there and do the work, clean the pots and pans, and serve the food that makes this operation work well. The second thing that I want to mention, I brought it up last meeting. Charlotte's Web is still ongoing. The community read started March 1st at Wegmans on the fence that you can drive by going 55 or 30 and magically see a spider web is there, and words will be appearing. Some pig, humble, all things from the book. And I believe the public library already has a web. So there are three of them in the community, and people are enjoying them, and it will be culminated by the event at the State Theater at the end of the month. I believe on tomorrow evening that the City Council and the Mayor and all the people who sit up front over there will also be receiving Charlotte's Web, so that all of us will be equal in terms of being able to read that lovely book. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else? Leslie.
I thought it was somebody else. This is an announcement, again, especially for Frank, and I apologize ahead of time, Frank, that the second in the series of the Chet Cashman Classic boxing matches is occurring this Saturday at the Greater Ithaca Activity Center. Frank, I'm apologizing because you cannot fight because we could not find a doctor who was willing to take the risk on having you be a contender, or the insurance will not carry it. So I just wanted to let all of you know, if you miss the last one, come on down on Saturday, 3 o'clock at the BJM Elementary School gym with boxers from throughout our region coming to perform and support a great program at GIAC in honor of Chet Cashman. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Leslie.
No response for it.
Leslie? Yeah, he's got his hand up again, Leslie. Yes, Frank.
Leslie, what time is that?
3 p.m.
And you and I can't even spar?
I can. You can't.
Can we dance?
They're worried about what she's going to do to you, Frank.
Did you hear what I asked you, could we at least dance?
Perhaps. Perhaps we'll start the new Ithaca Dancing with the Stars. Me and you.
There you go.
My Medicare.
Sounds like a fundraiser to me.
I didn't do the donut hole. My Medicare is okay.
As I said, Frank, I think we should be worried about what she'll do to you. Even if it's dancing.
Some frustration to take out, Frank.
Joe Mariano could be the ref.
Peter Stein.
I just want to share with you an experience I had about, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, something like that. I was reminded of it when Mike talked about the Civil War commemoration. Something very moving I saw. I was in Washington at the time, and someone suggested that my wife and I take our grandchildren to what's called the Lincoln Cabin. And it turns out there's a place inside the confines of the District of Columbia that's the highest point in the District of Columbia, and that's a park which is now a home for elderly servicemen and women. And it turns out that that was Lincoln's retreat, Lincoln's Camp David, during the period of the Civil War. And he used to go there on weekends to get out of the heat of Washington. It was 50 feet higher, so it was a little bit cooler. And at the moment, instead of the soldiers and sailors' home, they had a graveyard there that was used for burying the dead from the Civil War. And that was a constant reminder to Lincoln. Lincoln would see it when he would take his horse from the White House down to the cabin, and when he went walking outside, there was this constant train of people with coffins burying them. And it gave him, it said, a tremendous hands-on feeling of what that meant to the country to carry on the war. And it occurred to me that's an experience that leaders don't have anymore. And it must have been terribly sobering.
Thank you, Peter. And welcome, Bill. Would you like to address us from the town of Ithaca?
Sure, thank you. For those who don't know me, I'm Bill Goodman. I'm the town board for the town of Ithaca and also deputy town supervisor. And here to give a little report about the town of Ithaca. I thought what I would do is, since I'm the chair of the Codes and Ordinances Committee for the town, I'll just tell you a little bit about some of the town laws we're working on. And currently, this month actually, we've got on our meeting agenda for next Monday night a public hearing on some changes we're making in our conservation zone laws, and particularly to regulate timber harvesting. One thing we're getting concerned about is just wanting to make sure that folks who have land in conservation zones aren't cutting down a lot of trees. We've actually had a couple of instances in the past few years where folks have been basically clear-cutting some land in the conservation zones, and we're getting worried about that. So we've got that on the agenda for this month, and then next month in April, we're going to be having a public hearing on a law we've been working on for a number of years now, a stream setback law. And Peter laughs because he remembers it from when he was on the town board, and I don't know if Will was being worked on when you were there. But finally, we've gotten through a number of drafts. We've had comments from Cornell and various landowners and our planning board and our conservation board. And so we've got a law that is going to be basically creating zones along most of the streams, and the size of the, there's going to be a zone 1 on either side of the stream and then a zone 2 beyond that. And the size of the zones depends upon the size of the stream, basically the number of acres in the watershed that's feeding the stream. And we will be restricting various activities within those zones. Zone 1, of course, being more restrictive right next to the stream, and zone 2 being a little less restrictive on what activities landowners can do to try and protect the riparian buffers on all of our streams to help improve water quality. And then another law that we're just starting to work on, actually in our Public Works Committee, which I also chair, is a road preservation law, and we've decided to model our law based upon your law. So we've been reviewing your law actually just this afternoon, and hopefully in the next few months we'll have a road preservation law of our own. And then some of the upcoming projects for the Codes and Ordinances Committee, we're going to be looking at making revisions to our sign law. Our sign law seems to have caused lots of problems in the past in figuring out how it could be interpreted, and it has resulted in lots of requests for variances. So we're going to try and update our sign law to make it more easily implementable. And then also we're looking at possibly adopting an affordable housing ordinance, and that might at some point require developers of projects over a certain number of units to include perhaps a percentage of affordable units. And of course, we have to talk about what will we mean by affordable. Lots of people use it for different purposes, but it would probably be defined within a range of median income, a certain percentage of median income. A certain number of houses in every development would have to be affordable to folks who make a certain percentage of the median income. And so those are a couple of the big things that we're going to be looking at adopting, as well as once our comprehensive plan committee has finished their recommendations on updates to our comprehensive plan, which is projected to happen probably sometime this summer. And of course, the town board will have to take those up. And of course, once we revise the comprehensive plan, then we'll be looking at redoing our zoning, all of our zoning codes, as well, to bring them in conformity with the new changes to our comprehensive plan. And one of the things we're thinking about along those lines is having certain areas of the town, whether they're called development focus areas or nodes, some people have used that term in the past, but certain parts of the town where we want to try and encourage development, or we think are the best places for a lot of development to happen, might have some type of overlay zone that would be more like formed-based zoning. I don't know if folks are familiar with form-based zoning, but, you know, getting away from some of the old traditional zoning of having, high-density residential, low-density residential, medium-density residential, commercial and industrial, but allowing more of a mixed-use zoning so you can have some shops mixed in with residences on lots of different sizes, and also looking at setting standards about what the building might look like, rather than just dealing with things like setbacks and distances from the side yard and the rear yard and the front yard, but actually looking at how the building is constructed. And so you might even have buildings that have commercial on the first floor and residential or office on the second floor and apartments on the third floor, and mixing uses within a building itself. So that would be something that would be quite new for the town and for this area as well. So with that, I guess I'd be open to any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Bill. Any questions? Carol.
Yeah, thanks for the information on the stream
setback
proceedings. We don't have as much money as the county doesn't have as much money as we used to put into the stream shoring up of stream banks. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important, and we could never do more than put a dent in that. So it's good that our municipalities are looking at how to protect erosion on the streams. I have two questions on it. Mm-hmm. One is, it came to my attention, I believe it was last spring, that somehow over time in the translation among maps, where the streams coincided with the boundaries between the town and the city, some of the distances, the marked distances, had somehow gotten lost or had not conveyed from one map to another. So as you look at that, I just want you to be aware to make sure to look and make sure that all along the edges of those city-town boundaries that the distances are there. And then did you mm-hmm. give a time frame that you expect to proceed?
Yes, we'll be at our meeting next Monday. We'll be setting the public hearing on the ordinance for our April meeting. So that will be April 9th. Our meeting in April will be Monday the 9th, and so the public hearing will probably be set for around the 5:45 to 6 o'clock time frame towards the beginning of our meeting. And so we'll see. As I said previously, we've gotten lots of comments from Cornell and some other landowners who would be affected by this. And so, you know, we've gone through their comments in committee and made some changes to the draft law. So it'll be interesting to see what type of public comments we get at the public hearing in April.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Dooley.
Do you have a wetlands law in the town?
Yes, we do. And actually, that's one of the things that's on our long list of agenda items for the Codes and Ordinances Committee is to review that and make revisions to that and update that. So we'll probably be doing that at some point during this year.
I wanted to call your attention to a fairly new document that the Water Resources Council's Wetlands Committee has finished work on, and it's actually a combination of wetlands and stream protection. So you might want to take a look at that. It's hot off the press and see if it's useful to you.
Thanks, Julie. Mm-hmm.
Frank?
Yeah, Bill, just to piggyback on that, the document that Dooley's referencing is suggested. It's not our law. It's a suggestion that a municipality can use in developing its own. But it was the same thing that the Water Resources Council did a couple of years ago on the MS4s. And it's quite good. The document, you can pick it apart or whatever, but I asked the committee to deal with it, and they did. So that should be coming, as Dooley said, rather shortly.
Great, thank you.
You bet.
Anything else for Bill? Thanks very much for coming.
Thank you.
And the Town of Ithaca gets the gold star for being the municipality that comes and talks to us the most. We'll send a TCAG message that says, everybody, come on down. Thank you. For my report, a couple of quick things. Kathy has run by all of you a second set of dates for the special legislature meeting to consider the capital plan review recommendation on the old courthouse. And it seems, except for one person, she's been able to get notice, you know, get your availability. So we're closing in on a date. And I, at the moment, the best date is Tuesday, March 27th. And we asked about 5:30, but one person asked, could it start at 6? I hope that's not a big change, but that would be a great convenience to some people. So hold that time, and we'll confirm within a day or two, if you don't mind. We had a very productive meeting with Senator Tom O'Mara and his aide Pete Ellis. Last week, Joe and I with Frank and Will. Thanks very much for coming. Tom is very, you know, really supports the things we ask about, although we didn't talk much about fracking. So, although, Carol, we did give him your white paper on taxation and talked about that a little bit. So I do feel that he's a good advocate. I really think he's actually working for mandate relief for us and for a hard cap on Medicaid, not just saying he's in favor. Barbara Lifton's been doing the same but I get a good feeling from him. We have a conference phone call set up for tomorrow, too. Okay, that was just confirmed today, with Senator Mike Nozzolio. 2 o'clock in your office, Joe? So assuming that we don't have a crowd of 15 at that time, but anybody is more than welcome to join us for a conference call with Senator Nozzolio, which, you know, that's better than nothing. So I'm glad we were able to set that up. Another event coming up is the Sister Friends Luncheon next Thursday, week from Thursday, the 15th. And, Leslie, do you have tickets? Or? Okay.
Sold out.
They're all sold out. Then I won't tell anybody any more about it. So I won't be able to be there because I'll be in Albany, another meeting of the Medicaid redesign team, the working group that I'm on. Briefly, to report on the last meeting that we had, we looked pretty exhaustively at a list of the possible tasks that the state could take over from counties. If you remember that the proposal from the governor for the cap on administrative reimbursement is supposedly tied to the state taking over some of the administrative functions of Medicaid, and theoretically then we'd be able to save money as they take over a function. What that means is we can fire some people. So that's the idea. So we looked exhaustively at this list of functions. It's really a mixed bag. There's some things that will help 30 counties but won't help the other 30 counties. There's some things that won't help anybody. There are some things that would be great, but they can't get it done for 2 years. So the next thing that has happened is that they, since that meeting, the Department of Health staff went back and chewed on the whole list and sent back a list saying, these are the things we could do in 2012, these are the things we can do in 2013, these are the things that would take at least till 2014 or longer. So, counties, how much money will that save you if we did those things? Since I don't know, I sent it on to Gene Broccoli and Patricia Carey and Tom Herden and DSS, and waiting to hear back what their take is. But my gut feeling, my quick look at the list was really small potatoes in 2012. That the stuff they think they can take over is, you know, just not going to add up to the very much at all that we might be able to save and perhaps reduce workforce or move people to a different function, let's say, rather than just fire people. So that's still in the negotiation. It is a critical piece of information, I think, as the legislature negotiates with the governor's office and Department of Budget about the Medicaid proposals, because I think the savings aren't there, you know, or they won't be there for at least a couple of years because they've got to completely redesign their technology. They've got to hire new staff. You know, it's not easy to just turn on a dime and hand over a complicated program and, you know, magically save money at the county level. So stay tuned, but that was kind of at the heart of the letter that I sent to our delegation with copies to the governor's office and Steve Aquario, et cetera, and I emailed those copies to you this afternoon. But because I'm usually, I will say, critical of the governor, I want to say something nice. There's an article in today's paper about contraception, and which we're hearing a lot about lately. There was in its effort to save on Medicaid costs, one of the actions the state's been taking has to do with substituting generic drugs for more expensive prescriptions. When that comes to birth control, it gets a little complicated because it's such a personal decision what kind of birth control somebody uses. Well, the state had initially sort of allowed insurers to just substitute a cheaper form of birth control for what somebody was using. There were some complaints, and Jim Introne from the governor's office has made a ruling that the health plan, that insurers have to provide coverage for Medicaid patients who are using birth control for the choice that they make, that the patient makes, even if it's more expensive. That it is a personal decision, and that women who use have chosen a particular method, they get that method covered. They're not going to be forced to use a cheaper form of birth control. So I just wanted to call attention to that. That was the right call. And I just also want to point out, although some people seem to not get it, I think birth control is not just a woman's issue. Because last I checked, they weren't the only people involved. So it's obviously a big issue these days when people should be worrying about jobs. That's what we're talking about. So just a little bit of good news on the governor. I have one appointment. Yes, Frank.
Will you take one comment on what you just said?
Sure.
I don't think you, when you said a cheaper form of birth control, I don't think you meant a lesser form. I think you meant a less expensive form. It's just because it's generic doesn't mean that it's less effective.
Well, that's right, birth control is more complicated than most medications. So, for example, it's less expensive to take a daily birth control pill than a weekly pill or a patch or something. So if the only goal is to save money, then yes, you go to the cheaper pill. But in fact, the insurers were saying that they wanted to insist that women would use this the cheaper generic methods unless they fail. Well, we know what that means. So if birth control fails, then you now have a child. So it's not just like any other medication. So less expensive may be qualitatively different. So thanks, Frank. Thanks for pointing that out.
I didn't ask Rush Limbaugh.
And I'm really glad you didn't. All right, I have a one appointment, Paul Levesque, as the business representative to the Workforce Investment Board. I make that appointment. And I know there's some concern that he does not reside in Tompkins County. I checked on that. And 2007, we passed a resolution, this body passed a resolution, saying that up to 5 members of the WIB, out of a total of 35 Workforce Investment Board members, up to 5 could be residents from outside the county, because there's a also a mission that employers be well represented on the WIB. So it's an effort, because they've had quite a bit of trouble finding people that they wanted to fill the slots who didn't live in Tompkins County, or who lived in Tompkins County. So I just wanted to mention that. It's a little bit unusual appointment, but that fits with our criteria. Any questions? All right. Thank you. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. I think I have a short report again tonight, just to bring you up to speed on our search for 2 of our managers, mental health. I think I reported last time that the search committee has whittled down the number of applicants. There are, I think, 24 applicants. They whittled that list down to about half of that to ask for writing samples. They will be using those as kind of a filter in a meeting on March 21st to decide who to bring in for the first round of interviews. My sense is there'll be about a half a dozen or so folks who are invited for an interview, and those interviews will occur on April 3rd, and we're still hoping by May 1st or so to have a decision on mental health. Highway, we received 10 resumes. The committee's going to meet Thursday of this week to go through those, to review those and decide which of those we want to bring in for interviews. So both of those selection efforts are underway, and I think we're turning the corner on just reviewing resumes to actually getting into interviews and hiring. I think all of you know, but I'll remind you that at the airport, our service to LaGuardia, the last day of service will be March 24th. And whenever I say that, Bob Nicholas insists that I remind people who might be listening or watching that we are still running United Airlines through Newark, which still offers very convenient service into New York City. In fact, I think there may be more public transit options from Newark the name's from LaGuardia. So we still have a very good service into the New York City metro market through Newark and United Airlines. My favorite weed, hydrilla. Very quick to say hydrilla after that. I think you've seen the effects of our efforts to turn up the burners on lobbying. We said it now very often. We are really at a crossroads. We are, if there aren't the right decisions made over the next week in Albany about funding and eradication efforts, it is very possible that control will be lost of hydrilla. And I think all of you are familiar with what happens if that occurs and how quickly it spreads and how devastating it will be to waterways. We've received very good media coverage. The media coverage, in turn, has generated some important connections. We received an email from Senator Gillibrand's office asking what her office can do to help. We quickly responded with specific suggestions about how they could help. We are getting some traction on the issue. We need between $700,000 and $1 million a year from the state over the next 5 to 8 years to be effective. I did the arithmetic. It's 0.001% of the New York State budget. That's what we're looking for to prevent some large costs. So I think that's progressing well, and we should know within the next couple of weeks, because we're hearing the budget will be decided, we hear, before April 1st of this year. So they're racing to the finish line on budget. Last thing I'd like to note, and this is really a kind of a pat on the back for Paula Younger and some efforts that have occurred through my office, but through her over the last couple of days. We received a call from the New York State Department of Health, Department of State, a few days ago, advising us that there are some opportunities for summer camp experiences for middle school kids in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, that's sponsored by the Oak Ridge National Summer Science Academy. And the request was, in the next 48 hours, see if you can find some kids who would be good candidates for this program. And Paula worked the phones, her network, through the superintendent of schools, through Cal Walker, various others. Some of you, I'm sure, I think were contacted. And in a very rapid order, did identify five young people in this community who are now candidates for this week-long summer experience that specializes in math, science, and technology, absolutely free of charge, including transportation there. So we have two applications from Ithaca, one from Groton, one from the alternative school that have been submitted. So Paula received a nice pat on the back from the New York State Department of State, and I just wanted to pass that on to you. I think it's one of those things that are often unseen that happen that produce a lot of good for people in the community. So I just wanted to pass that on, and that's my report.
Sounds great. Thank you, Joe. Peter.
Joe, do you happen to know, is this hydrilla problem widespread in New York, or are we the only county that's having it?
No, I think it's in a couple of ponds, but they're contained. We are the first. The inlet has the first sighting of hydrilla in the entire Finger Lakes and Great Lakes system. So that's the goal. The goal is to essentially quarantine it here, eradicate it before it spreads, because once it starts to spread, it spreads rapidly and can very quickly get out of control.
I mean, I think that would be an important argument to bring to the attention of New York State.
It's been the centerpiece of the argument. In fact, we've involved as a part of the lobbying effort. And by the way, we've received some very good coaching from very knowledgeable people, including some folks at Cornell who have been giving us some guidance on some lobbying things. But we've reached out to a number of counties. We have support that has been expressed formally from Wayne County, Herkimer County, Onondaga County, and there's another one in there. There's a fourth county. The Chamber of Commerce has registered support.
Tioga.
And has reached out to other chambers and tourism boards. The Finger Lakes Institute has weighed in. So we have reached out to those communities. And Peter, that really has been the centerpiece. We want to stop it here, and if we don't, the entire system is in some peril.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, and I was interviewed tonight, this afternoon, on YNN about redistricting. And she said, do you have anything else you want to talk about? I said, yeah, can I talk to you about hydrilla? So that, I think, actually may be on tonight. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Joe, just one more tagline on hydrilla. Craig Scott from Soil Water Conservation District has been really supportive of Joe's and Martha's effort and been in Albany at the DEC level also regarding that.
It's almost in reverse, Frank. Craig has really been at the center of this. So we've been, I think, supportive of what he's trying to do. And I should have said that in my report. This is really, soil and water has played an active role, as has the city of Ithaca, as have people in the sheriff's office, the health department, emergency response. So this has really been a quick coming together of a lot of people who are stakeholders in success here. Ithaca College has been supportive. Cornell has been involved. But, yeah, our efforts at our level are really to help the folks like Craig who are doing hand-to-hand combat with this.
The other one that I have, Joe, can you say something about the status of the two special committees that you're sort of
there are two joint legislative department head task forces that we have put together. One is to look at the payment of compensatory time to county managers when they leave the county. It's been a long-standing issue that we've talked about at length. So we've set up the joint committee. And I can't remember the dates that these meetings are scheduled, but I know that a meeting has been scheduled, the inaugural meeting of that group, for within the next week or two. So that's one. The second one is the technology strategic plan that really grew out of that retreat where we talked about kind of a vision statement. Now we want to go hands-on and develop a very grounded strategic plan. That one also has been charged, and the group will be meeting within the next couple of weeks. I'm sorry, I don't have dates for you.
Sorry.
But the group has been assembled, the charge has been sent out, and the group is scheduled to meet.
Thanks.
Both are due to report back with findings midsummer.
Jim?
Joe, I believe the comp meeting is Friday at 2:30, the first one.
Okay.
Based on the email I saw today.
Good. Okay. Pat?
And the IT meeting is on Thursday the 22nd at 10:30.
Okay. All right. Fill up your dance cards. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
The solid waste manager asked me to report on something, which actually she reported to F&I, and after speaking with the chair of F&I, we decided it's probably better to do it as part of my report than as part of the F&I report. It concerns,
can you get closer to your mic?
I'm sorry. It concerns a notice of revocation of a hauler's license, and I just to give a little background. In order to pick up solid waste in the county as a hauler, you need to get a hauler's license from the Solid Waste Division. One of the requirements of being a hauler is that you follow all the county laws and state laws as well regarding recycling and solid waste pickup. If you fail to follow the law, your license could be revoked or suspended. After a pretty thorough investigation, Barbara notified a company, Fair Rubbish Removal, that the county intended to revoke its solid waste license. As part of that notice, it informs the company that it is entitled to request and have a hearing. The basis is that the company, pursuant to our investigation, was mixing recycling and solid waste and bringing it to a landfill. In other words, they were disposing of recycling. The company has requested a hearing. Under our rules, the hearing panel consists of a member of the legislature who's appointed by the chair. Interestingly, a member of the Solid Waste Advisory Committee appointed by the chair of that committee hasn't been active for many, many years, so we'll ask the chair to appoint someone for that. The county administrator, and then myself as an ex officio non-voting member. So we are going to schedule a hearing and have asked the chair to appoint people for that. And while we did send the letter to the company basically explaining the specifics of the charge against them. We don't really want to discuss the evidence in advance of the hearing as not to prejudice anybody who may be part of the hearing panel. I expect within the next week we'll have a date for the hearing. The company, as I say, has responded and requested a hearing. We will take it from there. Obviously, it's a serious matter, and the company doesn't deny the seriousness of the matter. And if a license is revoked, a company cannot apply to get a new license for at least 6 months. And so that's my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I really don't want to discuss the evidence because I don't want to prejudice anybody who may be on the panel.
Thank you, Jonathan. And if anybody's interested in being on the panel, please let me know in the next day or two. Any questions? Okay, thank you, Jonathan. David Squires, Finance Director.
No report.
No report. Moving right along. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Carol.
Yeah, I would like to add a resolution. It's in your packets supporting the New York State Department of State Local Government Efficiency Grant application. This is to study the feasibility of shared services of Tompkins County and local roads for cost savings and efficiency measures.
Okay, is there a second to add that? Just Pam, seconds that. We need 10 votes to add it. All in favor of adding it to the agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else? All right, thank you all. I will read the consent agenda. If you have anything to be pulled off, just holler out. Resolution A, approval of amended... Off. Resolution A is off. Resolution B, authorization to increase hours, micro computer specialist, information technology services, and there are two appointments to the Environmental Management Council, Red Pony Carpenter, Town of Enfield, and Emily Rebecca Hamilton, City of Ithaca. Motion for the consent agenda by Dooley, seconded by Will. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thanks very much. First Committee, Budget, Capital and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. Resolution C, which is terminal pay for the sheriff's office. Where is it?
Jim, can't hear you.
Here it is. Appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay, sheriff's office, civil division. I would move that.
Seconded by Brian. Any questions? It's a short roll call.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Proto? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
Appropriation Resolution D, appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay sheriff's office corrections, and I would move that.
Seconded by Dave. Any discussion? Short roll call.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
One second. The next meeting of the committee will be the 23rd of March, I believe, at 3:30 in our usual place. Thank you very much. That is our committee report.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
I don't think we have any report to make. Our next meeting is tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And hope to have an interesting meeting.
Thank you. All right. Workforce. What? Is that budget or is that WDIC? It's budget. Resolution A, Jim. That's right. We should go back to Resolution A. I'm sorry. Pull from the consent.
The workforce. Nathan pulled it off, and you want to talk about
you have
what?
To move it. I think you have to move it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Where did it go? Oh, all right. Amended Approval of amended bylaws, Tompkins County Workforce Diversity Inclusion Committee, and I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy.
And they're included.
Okay. Seconded by Kathy. Nathan?
All right. The only thing that I'd like to change, and hopefully this is friendly, is that there was I had heard that there was just some confusion on Article 7, number 1, which is on page 3. Mm-hmm. And I would like it to read, amendments to the bylaws may be made by a committee quorum in any regular meeting, provided that the proposed amendments were read at the previous meeting, or, and this is the bold text, included in the agenda for the meeting of which action at which action is to be taken. And then instead of the remaining part in italics, which is just going to read, therefore, proposed amendments will be sent in writing to the membership 5 business days prior to the meeting. That's just for clarification.
Can you read that again really slowly and distinctly? Because
yep.
I couldn't understand what you said.
Sure, yeah, that's no problem.
I'm trying to follow it in my Article 7. That's
it's,
on page 6.
It really,
six
like, substantively, it actually doesn't change it. It's just
that's
it's
on page
it's
6
clarity.
Of the packet at the bottom of the page, Article
yep,
7
Yep, packet
amendment.
Page 6, and then it's under Article 7, number 1.
Number 1, okay.
And it will simply read, amendments to the bylaws may be made by committee quorum at any regular meeting, provided that the proposed amendments were read at the previous meeting or included in the agenda for the meeting at which action is to be taken.
Now, all that's the same as
that's
I've got
be,
in my
yep.
packet right now.
And then the only thing that will change is that the italics instead of, I mean, it will be, therefore, proposed amendments will be sent in writing to the membership 5 business days prior to the meeting.
So is that inserted, or is it instead of the italicized
instead
part?
Of the italicized part. That's right.
So, therefore, the proposed...
So the number one that's in there, Kathy... There's a therefore being added to that number one. It will no longer be italicized.
Yeah,
and either. Now, that's what I'm trying to follow. Is it and either, or there's no either anymore?
There's no either,
no, there's
anymore,
no either
because
anymore.
It's addressed.
It's the word therefore.
Yeah. So the second sentence ends at meeting. Therefore, the proposed amendments will be sent in writing to the membership 5 business days, adding business, prior to the meeting, period, and the rest is gone.
Right. And all that does is clarify it, because in the beginning part, basically, it says that you'd be read at the previous meeting, which was repeated in the italics,
right.
So that's why we're limiting that part. And
then
also,
now I understand.
And then also, because it's included in the agenda, that means it's because it's included in the agenda, it has to be in
yep.
5 business days prior. So it's just kind of clarifying that fact.
Got it.
Yep.
So is that friendly to the mover and seconder?
It is.
Kathy?
Okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Then that is now the motion. Those are now the bylaws. Are we ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. What?
Yes, no, that's fine. I'm
not opposed. Okay.
No, I'm not opposed.
Yes.
May I make a comment? I think there are people around the table who are very pleased that this has finally been completed. In a way that it's taken a bit of time, but I think
that's
the words
good.
Are put together in a way that people can deal with, and I appreciate the work that a whole host of people have done to get us to where we are today. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Speaking of which, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
I was not at the last committee meeting. And so I will ask Pat and Sadie.
Thanks, Leslie.
Share any information.
Actually, Nathan chaired
Nathan.
The meeting, so
oh,
perhaps we should ask
it.
Nathan.
Nathan.
All right. Yes.
You told me Pat did.
So we, at the meeting, we discussed the bylaws and incorporated some suggestions that both Peter and Dooley had and discussed that, and that's what you passed just now. And then the... And then we did have a discussion about handicap accessibility, and we talked about it specifically as it relates to the new legislature, potential new legislature chambers, and Pat gave an update on the meetings that she had been in about that. And then finally, we spent a great deal of time talking about the climate survey and how to enroll that with the staff. And basically where that was left is that we were originally talking about bringing it to the legislature, but the committee felt very strongly, and this was a consensus of the committee, that it should be unveiled to staff directly first, since it's their, you know, it's their climate survey. Obviously, we did take part in it too, but you know, it's mostly theirs. And so the idea is that there will be at least 3 of these climate surveys. Whoa! Wow. Okay.
I really am sorry. There's something wrong with this again tonight.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. All right. And so there will be at least three sessions at different parts of at different county buildings. We'll have a member of the WDIC there to kind of introduce it and give it context. And then we also will, once those dates are figured out, encourage legislators to attend that. There will still be eventually a presentation to the legislature, but that presentation will be focused on the climate survey results, but also on kind of actions that the committee recommends that the legislature take in terms of training and other support programs. So that's basically what we discussed. I don't know if, Pat, do you have anything that you'd like to add or on that meeting?
I think you covered it very well.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions for Nathan? Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Nathan.
Yeah, thank you, Leslie.
Okay. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee will be meeting on the 13th at its regular time. Remember, the day has changed. It will be a Tuesday instead of Wednesday. But I have a couple of items. Joe mentioned earlier that the Mental Health Commissioner's search is nearing the interview stage. I think the actual number of people that we're going to be seeing or that we'll be reviewing regarding the questions is 14. And the 2 days, we've had to schedule two different days because there's such a group of them. But there'll be all-day sessions for the interviews. And, boy, thanks Steve Estes for all the work that he's done on that. The second item, led by Lisa Holmes at the COFA office, we're sending a team to Baltimore. You'll remember that we've been working feverishly on the care transitions, that project where we'd be working with all the health delivery groups in the county. And I reported earlier this year that we were successful in being designated as one of the groups that will be receiving. There's no actual funding. There's money attached to it, but it's not a grant. They have to deliver on the deliverables that were in the application. The next step, as one of the selected groups, they're headed for Baltimore later this month, or I think 3 days, for a... I guess they're going to be inoculated into the process, but that is really well received. A couple of us want to meet with the folks at Workforce Development to see if there's something that we can do about getting geared up for another piece of this, which involves one of my all-time favorites, some of you will remember, home health aides. We need to start beefing up the number of people in the community with regard to home health aides, because if we're successful in getting a piece of the action, we're going to need some more help. And it's an opportunity to expand the health care employment opportunities in the county. So stay tuned on that one. One last word on hydrilla. And my hat as the chairman, I'm glad Bill is still here, because I think this falls into the town of Ithaca's jurisdiction. The sailing club that is on East Shore Drive, it's called the Cornell Sailing Club, but I'm not sure that the university owns the site. They have a piece of it, but I think I'm just not sure about that. But on the Water Resources Council last week, we were made aware that they have an application into the DEC to dredge. And the WRC, the Water Resources Council, was quite concerned about that, particularly because of all the things you've heard about hydrilla. And the council really took that up as an issue, and we've been asked to submit a letter to that club to alert them to the potential damage that they could do, especially in light of all the work that some of the folks around the table here have done. May I ask him a question? Please. Bill, do you know who actually owns that sailing club?
I assume it's Cornell.
It's right at the foot of the
The cooling treatment plant.
Yeah, I know the town park that's there. There's a little town park where we have a gazebo, and that's actually under a 99-year lease from Cornell. So the town doesn't even own the land that its little park there is on. And so I assume that when Cornell put its center there, they had purchased that entire property from whoever had owned it previously when it was a sailing club before. But I can definitely check into that.
But does the location fall wholly within the town of Ithaca or partially within the city?
No, that's all within the town limits. Yeah, the city boundary is down past Boynton Middle School.
Okay.
Because everything from Boynton up is in the town.
Is in the town. We may be sending you folks a copy of that letter then, too. Thank you. Thanks, Mark. That's, again, one more shot. The committee will be meeting on the 13th.
Thank you, Frank. Dooley.
I didn't realize this was going to come up. The EMC's Environmental Review Committee sent comments to Cornell, to DEC, about this project because it was not viewed as requiring any kind of permission. DEC, well, Cornell put it in as routine maintenance, but it's not clear that there has been any previous dredging, and the EMC was very worried about hydrilla, so I'm delighted that the Water Resources Council has gotten into that. And I thought the town should have received the EMC's comments, but maybe you didn't.
I'll check.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all very much. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Choctare.
Thank you. I have two resolutions that I will start with. The first is the related to road use. There's a revised version in your packet. It's a minor revision and a whereas part halfway down the first page. Authorization to execute an agreement with Labella Associates, PC, to provide engineering and related services required to implement the Tompkins County Road Preservation Law. And I so move.
Seconded by Dooley.
If people have questions, as you'll recall, we passed a road preservation law. Was it in back last year? And this brings it to the next step, implementation. This firm, Labella, will work with us to establish a permit and bonding process. I just want to take a minute to thank everybody who's participated in this. It's been a long haul to get here, and I wanted to thank in particular Joe, who has been a stalwart at every phase of the whole road preservation effort. I think we're breaking some new ground. This brings it to just the conclusion of establishing a process to work with our highway department to set up the templates for all the forms that will need to be filled out, to understand how we post, how we let developers know that they're required to follow the law, and then to work with the developers or be paid essentially by the developers as they to be the firm that will evaluate the condition of the road at the beginning and the end of the development process. So I do hope that we will bring this to conclusion. The committee was in unanimous agreement among the firms that applied that this was the right one.
Thank you, Carol. Frank and then Mike.
Carol, just there are a couple of questions. The last statement you made, the Labella will be establishing a procedure that will then be integrated into the highway department for them to continue actually issuing the permits and filling out paperwork and everything, but Labella will be retained to do a pre-evaluation and a post-evaluation? And I have one more question for you.
There are two parts of this, as I understand it. Joe, you can correct me. One is that they will be working. We will be paying them. The county will be paying them the amount, up to the amount indicated in this resolution to set up the process. So there will be, you know, so that we know the forms
right.
and so that we figure out how the developers will know. I mean, right now, they come to our towns, do land use. So that the, when they come for a building permit to our towns and municipalities, that, is, we believe, is the point at which they will find out, hey, you need a, you need to come to the highway department and make sure that whether you need to follow the county law as well. And so there will be a process of notification. That's the kind of thing that we will pay them to do. Then there will be permit fees, which we need to establish what those permit fees are, and bonding required for projects that are large enough to have trucks, numbers of trucks and weight of trucks over the threshold we've determined. And the amount that Lavella will be paid to evaluate the condition of the road at the beginning of the, and the end will be covered by the permit fees that we need to figure out how much they will be. They will be paid by the developers when they come to apply for a permit.
So Lavella is going to stay on retainer for a period beyond the time that it takes to develop the process, because someone, from what you just said, in their firm will do the pre- and post-evaluation of the road.
Yes.
Secondly, is there a time frame that you know about or that you can guess at as to when this will be completed so that it will be, and when it might be implemented? Will it be during this building season?
Yeah, we would hope, Frank, immediately after, if you approve this, immediately after this, to move to the contract phase, to get a contract in place with Lavella, because right now we have a law that's operative, and we need now to develop the way to implement that law. So I would expect that we will be in the permit development process within the next, let's say, 30 days.
Oh, that fast.
We need to move on this. And Lavella is prepared to do it, and they have a local project manager who is anxious to get working. So this will move quickly.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Carol.
Mike and then Kathy Lewis.
Carol, would you just mention where the $35,000 is coming from?
Yeah, that is fund balance in the highway department.
So it's not new money. It's not contingent money or anything like
that. It is not new money, and that is up to $35,000. We expect it to be come in underneath that.
Thank you.
Okay, and that's Kathy Lewis's question. Okay. All right. Any other questions? All ready to vote. All in favor of the revised resolution E. Please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous and a really big deal. Great. Thanks and congratulations to everybody who worked so hard on it. Thank you.
Okay. Then I have in your packets the resolution supporting the New York State Department of State Local Government Efficiency Grant application to study the feasibility of shared services of Tompkins County and local roads for cost savings and efficiency measures. In plain English, this is a shared services highway resolution. We have an opportunity to apply for funding from the state. The deadline is March 16th. The initiative has come from Joe on this. He didn't have enough to do, didn't rest on his laurels related to the health consortium, but jumped right in with TCOG to look at what's the next way in which we might share services. There's potential for big savings. This is in the highway area. It's so expensive to maintain roads that what we can save sharing is worth looking at. There would be up to a $10,000 worth of county match should we get the whole amount. Because it's due March 16th, we ask that for approval now to submit the application. I so move.
Okay. Second by Pam. Joe, did you want to say anything?
In terms of the initiative, this really is coming out of TCOG. It's been something TCOG has been talking about for the last couple of years as something to look at after they've gotten through with the health benefits plan, which they have. So we are kind of playing the point for them, but I do want to emphasize this is a collective effort, and we have strong municipal support. The only other thing that I would add, this is a very aggressive deadline for this grant, and we're gonna try to get everything in by March 16th. We're asking for resolutions from participating towns and villages. We are in scramble mode right now, so we're trying feverishly to get this in. We hope we do. But I just want to let you know there is some possibility that in spite of all these good efforts, we may miss this cycle. If we do, we think that the state will continue funding efficiency grants, and we might have a run at it the next time. But we are trying hard to get an application in by that 16th deadline.
Thank you, Joe. Kathy Lewis and Frank.
Thanks. Just two things. I wanted to clarify that it's on behalf of TCOG that we're applying for this,
yeah.
And I think that that's good. The other one is, it looks like from the whereas is that this has to do with roads and bridges, but that's not clear to me in the resolve necessarily, but if you tell me that, I believe it.
It applies to both. Roads is, you're right, sometimes we split it out. Dooley often reminds me of that too. Roads here is generic, so and
it's
highways,
just
so it'll cover both.
The title is local county and local road, local government efficiency grant program application. So it doesn't say bridges, but it includes bridges too.
That's correct.
Okay, great.
Frank?
Joe, I really know that this is, as you said, this is pretty aggressive timetable, but the first, who will receive and administer the $100,000, and who is it? Who will decide on how that money gets spent?
Right.
Secondly, will only the municipalities that agree to participate financially be ones that are looked at in this grant?
Second question is harder than the first. The first question, much like we did with the benefits plan, remember that came about through a similar kind of grant, a state grant. The county was the applicant for the Health Benefits Consortium. We are the applicant on this on behalf of TCOG. We will administer the grant. So as a part of the grant, we may ask for some administrative overhead to be reimbursed for the services that we offer. But again, it's on behalf of TCOG and the municipalities that participate. Carol talked about local share. We will still need to figure out how we allocate that local match, that 10% local match. So that is really on the punch list of things that we'll need to do if we see we get the grant money. And we need to figure out a form that's fair. It isn't onerous to smaller participants. In terms of who we will look at as a part of this, in truth, it would be very difficult to include municipalities that don't want to participate in the analysis. I mean, I think at some point we'll have to look at, you know, how we provide services countywide. But if there is a municipality that simply says we don't want to be involved, then we're not going to try to coerce them into involvement. I think the only caveat there would be it could be that some municipalities just can't get a resolution to us in time. I mean, some have already met for their March meetings. We will certainly allow other municipalities in after this application is submitted. So we will want to make sure that we write this in a way that allows others to be involved in it after we get the paperwork into the state in mid-March.
Well, it looks like a 10% match total is $10,000. I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to be.
And that's what Carol was saying. If you want to look at a worst case, and this wouldn't be the case, in the worst case, if the county were to pay the entire local match, it's $10,000. I think that's the right perspective. Again, we will expect to apportion that somehow, but in the worst case, it's $10,000.
I want to ask the on behalf of my colleagues that represent the city. There always was a concern, depending on who happened to be mayor, Goody or whoever, that the city is part of the county. They may not be, I don't know, are they part of TCOG? Will some of the bridges, the city has problems too. I mean, is it possible that they would be permitted to participate in this look also?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I believe the mayor is bringing it to the city council at its next meeting. Bill Gray is supportive. The mayor has been supportive of TICA. It has to go to the council, but absolutely, we hope the city participates.
I mean, there's a couple of potholes in the city.
I found several of them. Right.
Okay. Right. Are we ready to vote? Okay. Resolution F. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right.
The rest of my report, so I believe that's all I have for action. The committee met March 2nd. That was Friday. I believe you may have gotten or will get in your box a map that looks like this. It is the 2012 Highway Project Map, and listing on the back of the road and bridge projects. I just would encourage you to take time to look at it. It is clearly much less of a program than we wish we could implement, but it is within our budget. Our highway department will be out there this spring. They will publicize where and when, and you and your constituents can watch the website and the news for information about where there will be road work and bridge work. On the public art, I talked about that under privilege of the floor. As dictated by a resolution in 2010, I think it was August of 2010, the F&I committee looked at and gave approval to the design for our first county public art project. We were very pleased to do that, and that the process established for review of that and presentation to the public had been followed. That was a 4-1 vote. I will circulate. The top page is the design for the circular portion of the old library. That is the portion that was covered by the 2010 resolution. The artist and the city commission would like us to do two things. One, that would have to come back to the legislature, and one is to keep it up there for more than 4 months, and the other is to have the design go onto the flat portion of the old library. If you look at that building and think about what it looked like in 2010 and what it looks like now, again, I believe that many of us on the committee thought that that was a good idea, but the way that our resolution had read, that part would need to come back. But that's the second page. So I will circulate that this way. Bob Nicholas reported on his investigation of a complaint about leaking of de-icing fluid at the airport. That is ongoing. We don't have final results. But the committee asked to continue to follow that issue. We want to ensure that our green airport stays green. And we thank Bob for being responsive to the community concerns in this case. Solid waste you have heard about. We heard about, very exciting, a report on the grant to increase recycling in mobile home parks and apartment complexes that was in Newfield. It was successful, and we're hoping that we can increase the reach of that in the future. It already is, people are interested. Barb, there's a template for apartment complexes if they'd like to follow what was done in the Newfield grant. I believe that's all I've got for you, unless there are questions.
Any questions for Carol? Jim?
I actually have a question. If the county down the road in the next 6 months decides to do something with the building, do we have any obligation to anyone because this artwork may be on the building?
Yes. There's a process for notification of the artist and the amount of time that we would
that we would have to let them know that you're going to do something else with the building. I believe it was it 120 days?
4 months.
No, the ordinance stays up, for four months.
I believe it's a four-month notice on public art. I think that's
120-day notice.
I think it's up to.
Right. Let's see.
And it will certainly be shorter because it's... also in the resolution that we have to reach an agreement, so it will certainly be a shorter period of time. And in fact, the ones with the city of Ithaca allow them to do it immediately, and we'll probably do the same thing.
Arel was satisfied that would be enough time.
Okay. Thank you.
Julie Leslin, Kathy Luce.
I wanted to talk about the time period. The resolution that passed in August of 2010 gave permission for graffiti-style art to be up for 4 months with a 120-day notice to the artist for it to come down. And the 120 days and the 4 months were not a coincidence because it said it could be up for 4 months. Allowing it to be put up sort of constituted the notice that it could come down. So that was, I think, part of the mindset back when this was passed. I heard the woman who spoke as chair of the commission in the city say that this is not graffiti style, this is a different style. And so that's also a problem with the existing resolution. When the resolution was passed in 2010, my understanding, and it may have been my mistake, was that the area of the building that would be covered was the part that was constantly being spray painted. What is being proposed is something much grander. It's 30 feet high. So it's a very different kind of presentation than I think any of us were envisioning then, which makes it interesting. But conforming with our resolution is something we need to worry about. And the reason the committee went ahead, I think, and gave approval so quickly before making sure that we all agreed on what the original resolution meant was so that this part could be started and pretty much finished in time for the Ithaca Festival downtown this spring. That's my recollection of the discussion. And as for the art coming down quickly, the man whose sketch this is and who is working with the urban artists said that he's used to having his work last just a matter of days, and for him 4 months is terrific. So it wasn't troubling to him. But because the Community Arts Partnership is paying for this grant, they would like to see it stay longer than 4 months. So that's a little bit of the flavor, I think.
Part of the reason that I brought this to you tonight and wanted to keep you informed about it is that it might need action, and in order to meet the timetable might need action sooner than our regular committee meeting. So it may come at either our next meeting or the meeting after that, and we thought that you should have a little bit of a heads up and see the design, since it will start, the design as approved could start to go up there. So I didn't want to have it start to go up there on the area that did fit clearly into our prior parameters without your knowing about it. There's more committee work to do and more work for Arel and staff to do to make sure of what it is we need to bring back.
Okay, I have Leslin, Kathy Luce, and then Mike.
Julie sort of said much what I wanted to say, but I also wanted to just mention the name of the artist is Jay Stooks, S-T-O-O-K-S. Jay is an amazing muralist and artist in this community. He works with the Urban Art Club, and part of it is also disclosure for me. He works with the Urban Art Club, which is a part of GIAC programming, a number of young people at the high school. It's also part of the high school studio art class, and this is to be a community project, not just Jay doing the work, but also involving some of the students, paint by numbers. There may be times when other members of the community might be involved in helping to paint this mural, or whatever it is, on the curved wall. So I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned his name, know who he is.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm Kathy Lewis.
Thanks. Much of what I wondered about has been answered. The part that I'm interested in, people in facilities know that whenever I see graffiti on the wall of the library, I always call them up, and I know that they're, you know, understaffed, and they manage to get to it when they can, when they have the time. Knowing also that graffiti is, in some ways, an outlet for energy and a need for artistic expression, I try to be tolerant of it even when I don't understand it. But I'm also an ascriber to the broken windows theory in my own area of influence, and that means that if there's graffiti on my personal property, I eradicate it as soon as possible because I believe that more follows. That's telling you probably more than you wanted to know, but here's my question, and I think I know the answer, but I just have to state it up front. The artist is aware that probably or possibly people will exercise their artistic endeavors on the finished work, and our contract doesn't have any problem to us or liabilities to us about that eventuality, does it?
No.
Well, Jonathan has to make sure the contract says all this.
So if somebody graffitis over this art, we're not going to get in trouble with the artist, and we'll have to live with it till the time period that, whatever that is, and I'm still fuzzy on that, that it has to be taken down.
They know how to, they go and paint over. Okay. It happens all the time in this form of art.
Okay, so there's money in the budget for that.
He is
awesome.
They have it covered.
That's what I needed to know.
Okay, we've got Mike, Peter, and Dave.
As I recall, when we put the four-month limitation in there, the idea was to have a change in this kind of art in these mm-hmm. locations. To me, you can have the 4 months, and if there isn't someone else who wants to have a mural there, you could give them another 4 months. You could extend it. I don't think it's necessary to change our resolution to authorize it. Initially has to be a longer period, you know, 6 months or 8 months. I think that can be done based on what you have already.
Peter?
Let's see, a couple of points to respond a little bit more fully to the point that Kathy brought up. The artist said that that the actual incidence of graffitiing urban art is small. It doesn't happen. It's a graffiti inhibitor in practice. And he that's his experience. And he said, if unless I'm mistaken, that he would be willing to commit to repairing the mural if it did, in fact, have graffiti on it. And another thing I think I heard is that they were going to reserve some spot for graffiti. I learned a new word. It's called tagging, and that's what you say instead of graffiti, but that they were going to reserve a tagging area. And I think there is, the last point, I think there's some confusion in my mind as to whether what Mike said is consistent with the resolution or not, but I think we have to clarify that. I certainly agree with what Mike says. That I don't think anybody thinks that automatically we would paint over this thing at the end of the 4 months if there was no real reason to do that. But I think we ought to clarify that.
Dave?
I'm going to pass. What I was going to say has already been said.
Okay, thanks. And I would just say if the resolution 2 years ago said a particular kind of art, I don't think we have to require that whatever that definition of that kind of art is the only kind of art we put up there. I think that's exciting and wonderful. So is there anything else?
Martha, can I just point out, I was one of the people
Look, I have developed a new appreciation for graffiti since I started working at GIA. I was probably the first person that I don't like graffiti. And then when I saw some of the art, like what you're looking at right now, that's graffiti. You're not talking about tagging or the destructive stuff. Okay, that's a little different. That stuff you're looking at is graffiti art.
Yeah, that's going to be beautiful.
This portion.
And this group has done the same kind of art as backdrops for plays throughout this community.
Okay, thanks for bringing that to us so we have a sense. Yeah.
I'll just ask that people reserve judgment on what the 2010 resolution said until they have it in front of them, if they need to have it in front of them, and an update even for committee members. I had some conversation with Arel today. One possibility is not to necessarily have to rewrite what you did in 2010, but to bring something that would just speak to the old library. That we might not want to reinvent the wheel from before and the general policy for county buildings, but we might see the old library, especially given the condition it's in and the uncertainties about the amount of time that will be there, treat it differently.
Okay.
So thank you.
One last thing.
Okay, yeah.
I wanted to ask again, I know she said how this is going to be laid out, and I want to say, I think this is pretty, I'm worrying now that we're going to incur the risk of the building becoming a historical building because of the beauty of the art.
I just want to say, if we could do anything as fast as 4 months that would require that building to come down, I would, like, not going
to
happen.
To
we're going to get a Medicaid takeover first.
We're
we
good.
Need to move
we're
on.
Good.
Okay. We're Capital
curved
Plan Review Committee.
Tell me again.
Curved part.
Yes.
And then the section that faces DeWitt Park would be this.
Okay.
And this is the portion, the curved part. You have already given permission, and 4-1, the committee has followed the process.
Got that. Okay.
This portion would need to come back to the legislature because what you did before did not talk about permission
flat
for the
part.
Flat part.
I think we should
okay.
sell postcards with this on it. Money for the county.
And
just saying.
How shocking that an artist didn't follow the rules we set out 2 years ago. Oh, my gosh. So, all right, Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We have not met since our last legislature meeting. You mentioned about trying to set up the special meeting in the legislature to talk about the renovations to the old courthouse. And we will have a meeting this month on March 21st at 3:30.
Thank you very much, Mike. Government Operations Committee, Julie Kiefer, Chair.
Thank you. We are having the meeting this month on Monday the 21st at 2:30, but beginning in April and thereafter, the committee will meet on the Monday the 19th, the second Friday from 9:30 to 12.
Second Friday, 9:30 to 12.
And Kathy has this now, and so I think we'll be having a list of when committees meet any moment.
All right, so the committees are all set now. Got it. Okay.
This is not GO. I wanted to say something under F&I but about the MPO meeting today, mm-hmm. which Carol was not at because Carol's still recovering. But I was there, and Pam was there also. And there was an interesting item we had to meet on, act on quickly, which was to add to our TIP, our Transportation Improvement Plan, general information about the existence of something that will be happened, that will happen in the state's Transportation Improvement Plan if the governor and the legislature agree on it as part of the budget agreement. And that is that the governor has made available I think it's $1.2 billion of money from somewhere, and I can speculate where, but that's not the point, of which about $500,000 will go to projects that will be fully paid for by the state and decided on as to their greatest level of necessity. It will be roads, and it will be probably a little over 100 bridge decks that will be improved. Many of these might once have been things that we would have had to compete with other municipalities to have done in our regions. And the way the resolution that we passed was worded suggests that at least one of these projects will be in our area. So we don't know what they are. The state is not in any position to say and won't be able to say until their capital plan is okayed, which this year, unlike any other year, is going to be part of the general budget process. So it's hopeful we will have some money. There will be infrastructure improvements in the state, but we don't know what they'll be, but we endorse the idea. That's all I wanted to share.
Okay, thank you. Pam?
Yeah, there was just one additional piece in this, is that by having this very large infusion of money to work on roads and bridges for the state, that in fact that will end up freeing up TIP money from the state money for other projects for the future.
In the future.
I mean which would be a benefit, because of course we've all been worried about that funding.
Is there any way some of that can move to Hanshaw Road?
Well,
that's a different
Julie,
subject.
Julie.
I asked about that.
Julie, yeah.
Okay. There's nothing to be said at the moment.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that report. All right. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Will Burbank.
Thank you, Martha. We have not met since our last meeting of the legislature, but we will be meeting tomorrow at 3:30. You'll have, if anybody cares to join us, the exciting experience of seeing Will chair his first committee meeting.
Nice.
Among the things we'll be discussing is the resolution that went through public safety, which is the proposal to call upon the state to allow rifle hunting in Tompkins County. If you're interested in that topic, we expect to get to that toward the end of the meeting, probably around 4:50. But come at 3:30 and see the whole thing. That's my report.
Thank you, Will. Let's see. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yeah, thank you. The Broadband Committee met on February 27th. Lee Shurtleff attended the meeting, and you may recall when he did our report to the legislature that he mentioned the county tower system that's used for emergency communications, and that there might be some overlap with the needs for expanding broadband. So he did a presentation to the Broadband Committee, and it appears that, yes, in fact, there are significant areas of overlap between the places where there is a lack of coverage for broadband and the county tower system, which might be helpful in being able to see into some of those unserved areas. So the committee was pretty excited about that. We'll continue with that discussion as well as other items at our next meeting. The other major thing that we're involved in right now is we're having a series of meetings in various rural communities to talk about the work that we've been doing and get input from our rural residents on their needs and how they are responding to what we've done so far. The first meeting was in Lansing and the second was in Danby. The response has been very good. We had 32 people from the community at our meeting in Lansing, and we had 38 at the meeting in Danby, and we were very pleased with that. We showed the PowerPoint that was shown here at the legislature meeting, and we followed that with discussion. We also asked everyone who attended to fill out a survey, which will help us to gather more information and to quantify information that we have previously heard about anecdotally, but this will give us more of a database of information on people's needs for broadband. So those have been very successful so far. Our next meeting in the community will be Wednesday, March 14th at the Groton Town Hall. These meetings, by the way, when we put out the notices and so on, we're trying to make sure that everyone understands that they're open to anyone from any part of the county. They're not simply limited to that particular community. So whenever it's convenient for anyone to attend one of these meetings, we would be happy to have you. So the 14th is in Groton. On Wednesday, March 28th, we'll be in Caroline. On Wednesday, May 9th, we'll be in Newfield. I skipped April. On Thursday, April 19th, we'll be in Ulysses. So they all start at 7 o'clock, and the location for each one of them is at the town hall in the respective towns. I certainly would welcome any of you who would like to attend any of those meetings. We'd be happy to have you. Mike attended the meeting in Lansing. We were very glad to have him there. We also, at the Lansing meeting, had a representative from Barbara Lipton's office, and we were very happy to have that expression of support. Barbara has been very supportive in general of the work of the committee, and we've had a representative from her office at several of our previous meetings. Our next meeting will be Our next meeting for the committee itself will be on the fourth Monday of this month at the Borg Warner Room. It's on March 26th at 5:30 at the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library. These meetings are open to the public, and we would be happy to have any of you or anyone who's out there listening attend our meeting. That's my report. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Pat. Frank.
Pat, could you give Kathy the list of those dates, so, or maybe email us with the list of those dates on the where the in the various towns?
Sure.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Peter.
Can I ask Will a question?
Just okay.
Quick, really quick. Did you say that you would, what time did you say that you thought that the rifle issue would come before PDEC?
It's on the agenda for 4:50, Peter.
Minutes of 5, right?
Correct.
Thank you.
All right, and I forgot to say one thing about the, I think I mentioned to you that I've convened a couple of meetings of the local representatives on the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council and the working groups. We've scheduled another meeting for next Tuesday, the 13th, at 1:30 in the old jail conference room. So if anybody's interested in coming to that. Yeah, Carol?
Could you repeat that, please?
Next Tuesday, the 13th of March, at 1:30.
Madam Chair, may I please have permission to announce another meeting?
Okay.
I want to thank Pat in particular for taking the work of this committee and distributing it around the county. I think that's so important. It reminded me that on March 22nd, TCOG has asked Don Barber and I to present the results of the taxation investigation, implications of gas drilling and taxation, what the current system of taxation looks like. I think they were looking at a catchy title like, is there gold in them thar hills? But I think they ended up with something more mundane like taxation and drilling for municipal officials. And it is geared towards municipal officials, but everybody is invited. It will be on March 22nd at the library at 5 o'clock, 5 to 6:15. And we'll be presenting the sort of what the work group, the assessment and land valuation subcommittee of TCOG found an Excel spreadsheet looking at what might be a typical amount of taxes, property taxes, for a town to expect and when related to gas drilling. So,
all right, thank you. Brian.
Pat, first off, thanks for having all those meetings. I wished I would have known when you were scheduling the one in Groton, because I am out of town all next week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'd appreciate it if you'd let them know that. And the last thing is, and I don't want to hold anybody up, but I'm really not scheduled to be home till like 10 o'clock. So if anybody's got any suggestions what I can do for the next 2 hours. 2 hours and 22 minutes.
I'm afraid somebody might answer that. So maybe we'll do the minutes adjourn, and then we'll talk about it, Brian, all right?
Can I move for an executive session?
No. Well, you can move it, and we'll vote it down. Pam?
I'd like to move the minutes.
Oh, okay. Brian seconds. Any comments on the minutes? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's one opposed. 14-1. They pass. Motion to adjourn.
Wait. One. I know.
Couldn't do it.
Carol just reminded me that I received in the mail, I'm not here promoting meetings that Assemblywoman Lifton is sponsoring, but I remember receiving a notice here a couple of days back that under her aegis, there's a meeting at the library with two attorneys, I believe, talking about gas lease, if you've leased your property. And Carol, do you know about that meeting?
Yeah, I think
thought maybe
Monday or something.
Is that next week? Anyway, I thought maybe that's...
Well, let's see. We could just go through the calendar, you know. There's a couple 10 meetings every night.
Well, I'm trying to help Brian out.
All right. Yeah, I don't have it here. All right. Motion to adjourn.
Yes.
All in favor? All right. Good night. We're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.